For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's a Friday edition of the Juice on the Cuse podcast, January the 12th. Matt D'Agostino, Wes Chang with you to talk a little Syracuse basketball. As always, here we're right in the thick of conference season. One game in the rearview mirror this week, another one on tap for the weekend. Wes, and we look back first, Syracuse at home against Boston College, 69-59 victors. It looked pretty easy in the early going, not as easy in the second half, but Syracuse ends the game on an 8-0 run to win by 10. Kind of what stuck out for you in a 10-point win for Syracuse?
You know, Matt, we talked about this in the last podcast, but, you know, Boston College is a peer school to Syracuse in terms of where they are in the NCAA bubble. You know, Syracuse now 76 in the KenPom rankings, Boston College is 87. So, you know, you look at the overall picture, this is a game that Syracuse absolutely needed to keep bad losses off their resume. So really important win, even if it isn't something that's going to jump out to you on the NCAA resume. So, you know, that's the first kind of takeaway I had. And I know we're going to get to Malik Brown and the Naheem McLeod lineup swap in a little bit. But the other thing I wanted to mention at the top is that Qadir Copeland was, you know, really solid in the starting lineup in the place of Judah Mintz, who didn't start because of a violation of team rules. 8 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. He had some really critical assists down the stretch for a couple handoffs for dunks to, you know, Malik Brown. And I think Judah Mintz really struggled coming off the bench. You know, I know he got to the line 8 times, which was good, but 1 for 7 shooting from the field. He couldn't finish inside on a lot of his drives. So, you know, that's definitely something I wanted to point out. But overall, you know, important win for Syracuse. It's one that they needed to have. They didn't get down on themselves when they lost that late lead in the second half. So I was impressed that, you know, they didn't let the game get away from them after they blew that 19-point lead.
Yeah, Mintz didn't check in until the 10:30 mark or so in that first half for violating team rules. So sat the first 9.5 minutes. And something we talked about last time, Wes, was how would the guys that have been bench players for Syracuse this year, if a lineup change was made, which it was, and we'll get into the reasons why, but if they moved into the starting lineup, what kind of energy would they be able to bring rather than being a spark plug off the bench? And I think the reverse kind of happened for Mintz, like you said, where he just never quite found a rhythm once he did come into the ball game. But just as Syracuse ended the game on an 8-0 run, they started it on an 8-0 run, thanks to Chris Bell, Justin Taylor, both knocking down a couple of early threes. And Copeland, Brown, the guys that move into the starting lineup, both involved early and often. This defense is really turning into the calling card of this team. Came in leading the ACC in blocks and steals per game and just very active, forcing 22 turnovers. I thought the defense was spectacular, Wes.
Yeah, and you know, to your point, Matt, I think it was that Benny Williams steal when Syracuse had fallen behind 50-49. He gets that key steal on the ensuing Syracuse possession. Chris Bell knocks down that three-pointer. Then Boston College turns it over again, and that leads to a Malik Brown on the possession after that. And Syracuse goes down one to up four. That's a five-point swing based on defense. And you know the momentum had swung by that point. I think we all felt pretty confident that Syracuse was going to win that game at that point. And the other thing I want to point out is I'm really happy for Chris Bell, right? You know, he's been really struggling recently. You and I have talked about the lineup change, and we, you know, we're going to get into that more in the next segment. But, you know, 20 points, 4 for 9 shooting from downtown. I would like to see Justin Taylor kind of get that kind of production. But again, you're right, defense leading to offense and then Chris Bell getting going. And that was definitely a formula for success.
I was looking at some of Bell's splits. So with the 20-point game on Wednesday, he's had 7 games where he scored in double figures. He's averaging 18.6 in those games, including knocking down 29 threes. So with the 4 threes and 9 attempts, that kind of tracks with that trend. But it's been very polar opposite. He's had 8 games in single digits. He's averaging just 4.3 a game in those ball games, and he's made just 5 triples. So how much stock do we put in this game? He had 20 points Wednesday. He had 18 points in his previous 5 games combined. So it seems like he's a streaky guy who comes up with a big game every now and then, but has lacked some of the consistency.
Well, and that's kind of what we talked about with the starting lineup and keeping him in, right? You get a very early indicator of how good he's going to be based on his first couple of shots. And if he's shooting well, exactly what happens against Boston College. You leave him in the lineup and he knocks down, you know, 4 of 9 threes, and that's a great night for him. And if he doesn't, then he plays 10 minutes and he only scores, you know, 1 or 2 points. And that's kind of how Syracuse has to play it when you have a guy that's strictly in there for shooting. And speaking of, you know, the starting lineup, you know, obviously the other big story is that Malik Brown joined the starting lineup in place of the injured Nyheim McLeod. Now, our Jim Stickschulte was covering the game on Wednesday, and during postgame, he did hear from Kwadir Copeland, and Copeland said that Nyheim McLeod is going to be McLeod is going to be out for the rest of the season. So that's an important thing. We've been talking about that lineup swap. Obviously, you don't want it to happen in that way, but you can see how much more effective Syracuse was at the start, jumping out to that 19-point lead with Brown as a starting center.
Yeah, it changes the dynamic a little bit there. You can do a little bit more. The pace of the first half was just breakneck. It was sloppy. Let's not call it anything really other than that. But having Brown in there instead of McLeod certainly allows you to do that. But I find it interesting. I mean, of the two lineup changes, neither one of them was really due to production or lack thereof necessarily, Wes. You know, Mintz, I've probably is just a one-off kind of thing, and I would expect him to be back in there on Saturday against North Carolina. And then McLeod's injury allows Brown to step into the lineup for however long McLeod is out, whether it's just an indefinite period or it's season ending. We'll wait to get any official word on some of that stuff, but it is telling that, you know, you've got a teammate saying that you'll be out the rest of the year. But Malik Brown is just he's taking it to another level. I mean, the season-long stats are decent: 10 points, 6 rebounds, 71% field goal shooting. That's pretty spectacular. And 3.1 stocks per game. That's steals and blocks for all you stat head nerds out there like myself. But the last 5 games, 17.6 points, 7 rebounds a game, 7 blocks and 11 steals. So just stupid activity from Malik Brown, who's had awesome production the last few.
And just the stat line from the Boston College game, you know, fits right in line with that, right? 19 points, 8 rebounds. And what I love, and you kind of mentioned the steals and blocks together, but he had 4 assists, 4 steals and 4 blocks. So 4 of each in that category. That's incredible production, and that's part of the reason why we've been advocating for him to join the starting lineup and to play the minutes that a J.J. Starling or a Judah Mintz plays. And this is exactly what happens when he plays that. And, you know, it kind of leads into, you know, our last topic of the A block, which is, you know, can he keep that and sustain that production against North Carolina? Because they have more sturdy inside guys. You know, Malik Brown is certainly very productive, but he's not the, you know, the burly center that Syracuse may have had in the past. And, you know, they need a resume win to really vault them into the NCAA conversation. You know, North Carolina is 9th in the KenPom rankings. They're a top 25 team, and it's on the road. So this is very clearly a quad one game, and Syracuse is in desperate need of a resume win. Now, I don't think either of us expect it. And I think it's, you know, we were talking about the Duke game, you know, at the turn of the year. It's one of those games where I hope they play collectively well and they play competitively into the second half. That didn't really happen at Duke. They kind of kept it close, but I would like to see, you know, a 40-minute end-to-end competitive performance from them. And I assume you're going to say the same, Matt.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about the Duke game is kind of like the measuring stick. North Carolina has been a better team to this point so far this year. So maybe even more so here, especially in a place where Syracuse has not won since they've joined the conference in the ACC, and North Carolina has not lost at home this year. So Armando Bacot, RJ Davis, those are the two guys, extensive experience, Final Four appearances. They've got, you know, two of the better leaders in the country that they can fall back on. So certainly you mentioned Bacot is no small human by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm interested to see Malik Brown can be on him most of the game. Judah Mintz, who we mentioned, Brown had 4 steals, 4 blocks. Judah Mintz gets three steals against, against Boston College the other night, even though he's coming off the bench. So I think he sticks with Davis a lot of this game. But I think those two individual matchups may be very telling in where this goes for Syracuse on Saturday.
You know, it's really unfortunate that McLeod is out, because I actually think McLeod would have been incredibly useful for a game like this to defend against Bacot, who really just plays inside. I think where, McLeod really struggles is defending kind of those, you know, versatile forwards and centers that, you know, step out and can hit, you know, a 20 footer, whereas Bacot just stays inside. So, you know, it again, this would have been a Nyheim McLeod kind of game where he could have been effective with that 7-4 frame. And one last note about this is, here's what I'll say about the schedule, is that after they finish with the Tar Heels, the schedule really does open up. You know, they don't have another ranked conference opponent until number 21 Clemson on February 10th. So that's a run between the UNC game and the Clemson game of seven games against unranked opponents. And I'm not saying that they'll win them all, but if they can go, 6-1, 5-2, even 4-3 in these games, that's going to be a big boost and really keep their NCAA tournament hopes alive.
Yeah, we've talked about it. Not only trying to get those resume building wins, but also making sure you avoid the resume breaking losses along the way too. And so far, Syracuse has been true to character in that. They're winning the games they're supposed to win. They're losing the games they are not favored in. And you know, as much as you want to swing it in one direction to get that resume building win, you don't want it to kind of swing in the other direction either. So we will be back to talk with a North Carolina expert from the Rivals website here, right on the Juice on the Cuse podcast when we come back.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Juice on the Cuse podcast. Wes Chang with you today. We're thrilled to be joined by our great friend from Tar Heel Illustrated, the UNC site on the Rivals Network, Andrew Jones. Andrew, how are you today? Thanks for the time.
Wes, great to be with you, man. Appreciate it. Looking forward to talking about the Cuse and the Heels.
Yeah, so let's jump right into it. You know, obviously Syracuse facing off against North Carolina, 0-6 at the Dean Smith Center. So I just want to get your thoughts on how the 2023-24 season is going. If I ask you, you know, kind of what are the main storylines, what would you say?
Well, the main storylines are, this is a team that only had four scholarship guys back from last year. They brought in five transfers, and they had two freshmen come in, so they brought in seven new players, and it's taken them time to gel. They were pretty good initially, and they've just been getting better. They have three losses. One is in overtime to Villanova on a neutral site when they lost. The Carolina lost Cormac Ryan late in that game. They lost against Kentucky and Atlanta. They didn't play well, but they had the ball and a chance to send the game into overtime, and then they were beaten pretty soundly by Connecticut up at Madison Square Garden, and that was sort of a signature moment that made them sort of reevaluate some things with how they defend and how they go about rebounding. And they've been much better in those areas really since the Kentucky game. We didn't see tremendous improvement from them in the Kentucky game, but really those two games were really pivotal. They lost, so that's going to get your attention. And they've been significantly better defensively and on the glass since then. And right now, they're just coming off a three-game road stretch, Wes, where they won ACC road games, three straight quad one road games. They won by double figures. They rebounded each of them by double figures. They held them collectively to about 30% shooting from the floor and 9% from three-point range in the last three games. So right now, at this stage in the season, and I've been covering the ACC for 27 years, this is the best defensively Carolina has been by before mid-January I've ever seen.
Wow, and that's saying a lot. And we talk about some of the players we recognize, you know, a Bacot, which we've seen for, you know, a couple of years now. But give us an overall scouting report on what makes that defense so good and some of the players we should be looking out for tomorrow.
Well, North Carolina sometimes is not a lunch pail team. They have been so good with finesse, and they've outscored people, and they've been pretty good when they've had to be defensively, and they've been very good rebounding for years. But this club has a little bit of a dog mentality that last year's club didn't have at all. And even the club 2 years ago that went to the national title game, they had it in March, but they didn't have it before March. This club has it, and part of it's the guys they brought in. Harrison Ingram came in from Stanford. He is an absolute warrior on the floor. Plus, he's got a nice game to go with it. Cormac Ryan, Syracuse fans are familiar with. He was spent the last 3 years at Notre Dame. He's an absolute dog. He might be the toughest dude on the team. And then there's been the evolutionary aspect of someone like Seth Trimble coming off the bench. And he's a fearless player. Jalen Withers, a kid they got from Louisville, whose game is kind of needs some refining. And I know that the staff is trying to shake some of the Louisville off of him. But he's a back alley player. He's the kind of guy that'll drag someone in the back alley, and he's the one that walks out. And it's interesting to watch this and to write these kinds of things and do podcasts and talk about these things, because, Wes, I haven't talked about this kind of stuff with North Carolina for a long time. And that's sort of the edge that they have. Now they combine it with tremendous experience. They've got a lot of old guys. Their starting lineup, I think the average age is 22.9 years, and that's with a true freshman in the lineup. There are they're guys that have experienced a ton of different stuff in college, and they always haven't won. So there's a hunger. Cormac Ryan and Jalen Withers were on teams last year that combined to win 5 games in the league. They were returning Carolina players. They didn't get to the tournament. They got snubbed. So these are guys that have a hunger. They have a dog mentality. They want to play defense. They communicate well. They have really good chemistry, which wasn't the case last year. That was not a harmonious locker room much of the time. So they have a lot of those intangible boxes that are checked. Now the question is, will they defend every night? And are they good enough offensively to score when things break down? We're still trying to figure that out. They were earlier in the year, but now that teams have a lot of film and they've scouted them, the Tar Heels have not been super efficient offensively the last couple of weeks. So we'll see what they're like moving forward on that end. If they become super efficient and they keep the other stuff, they got a chance to be a really good team and play deep into March.
So give me a prediction for this game. You know, I think most Syracuse fans have penciled this in as a loss, and it's just a matter of kind of how much Syracuse loses by. So is this a team that, you know, Syracuse can kind of hang around with for most of the game before you guys pull away? Or is this something that's just going to be an outright rout from the start?
No, I don't. Look, Marquette probably thought they were going to be Butler the other night. I'm sure Kansas fans didn't expect to lose at Central Florida. Purdue didn't expect to get punked at Nebraska. This is college basketball. Syracuse got some talent. I've seen Syracuse a few times. I actually like what Adrian Autry's doing there. And they've got some guys. I don't know how healthy Judah Mintz is. I know he's been banged up a little bit. How healthy is he?
You know, he was actually out of the starting lineup because of a violation of team rules. So he's actually healthy.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So he played 30-plus minutes the other night against Boston College.
Okay, that's good, because where we got that, we thought it was a health issue. Okay, well, that's good. That's great for Syracuse. I think Syracuse has enough talent to go into Chapel Hill and win. It's a noon game. Carolina has played one game in the last – home game in the last 6 weeks. So what will the crowd be like? The Tar Heels coming off this 3-game stretch on the road that they put a ton of emphasis into, and they poured a lot into these games. How do they respond to a noon start? Syracuse should get your attention still in college basketball. You know, it's the name across the chest, whether they wear Syracuse or orange, it should get your attention, even though the Boeheim's not there. I think Carolina should be ready to play, but if they're not, then Syracuse can win that game. There are a lot of other teams in the league that I would expect Carolina to roll at home before I would check Syracuse on that list. I really like what I'm seeing, and I don't know how y'all feel about the way things are going. I think it's pretty wild seeing Syracuse play man-to-man defense.
It's going to be cool. It takes a lot of getting used to that. But, you know, now that we've had about half a season of it, I think it's become, you know, kind of, all right, well, this is what it is now. So we're not as shocked by it. But I think playing teams for the first time, when you see that we're just playing man, it will come as a little bit of a surprise for at least the first few minutes.
Well, that's the, you know, Carolina handled that zone really well. They won up there a lot. They beat them at home all the time. I'll never forget a game where, it was Bryce Johnson had 7 assists or 8 assists in a game. 7 of them were to Isaiah Hicks, just a little short jumper on the baseline. They just picked apart that zone. Now they don't have a zone to pick apart, although I'm not sure this is, would be a great zone team. But still, I think there's a lot of question marks going into this one because we're still just at the halfway point of the season. North Carolina is still an evolving team, as I'm sure Syracuse is. And as I said, Syracuse has the parts to go in there and win the game. I think North Carolina will win because I think the crowd's going to respond to this team and they'll be into it early. The Carolina fans so far like this team. You know how fan bases are. Sometimes they don't like a team. They didn't like last year's team. And they were so – the football fans didn't like the football team this year, especially once they started losing. And they hate them now. And that – when you're at home and the fans like you and they feel optimistic and they think, wow, the run could happen. There's going to be a lot of juice. There should be a lot of juice in the building, even for a noon start. So I think Carolina's going to win the game, but I would not be surprised if Syracuse pushes them. They got some players, man. They got some players and they like to play a little bit of a pace, and Carolina hasn't played the pace lately on either. And they've been really good defensively. That's part of it. But offensively, they haven't pushed it a whole lot. Their tempo has dropped a little bit, so it'll be interesting to see if the tempo picks up. That's what I think needs to happen for North Carolina to continue to improve. They actually have to pick up the offensive side of it a little bit.
Andrew, you mentioned juice in the Dean Smith Center for tomorrow. I appreciate you taking time on the Juice on the Cues podcast. Again, Andrew Jones from Tar Heel Illustrated, thanks for spending some time with us, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Anytime, Wes. Be happy to talk to you anytime. Be good, man.
Take care.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Final thoughts here on the Juice on the Cues podcast for Friday, January 12th. I'm going to stay in the basketball world, but I'm going NBA, Wesley. Mr. O'Shea, can you see? O'Shea Brissett had himself a game last night. The game itself was not any fun to watch. Boston down 75-38 at halftime to Milwaukee, and the Celtics head coach Joe Mazzulla, former West Virginia Mountaineer, basically said, starters, you're sitting the rest of this one out. So the second unit comes in the second half. And Brissett got 17 minutes, scored 13 points. Not only that, had a highlight reel play where he drops Damian Lillard and then posterizes Brooke Lopez. It was a season high for Brissett, 13 points in 17 minutes. And now in five games this month, he's averaging 6.6 a game in 15.2 minutes. So Brissett, making an appearance and making the most of it last night for the Boston Celtics.
Give that man more playing time. You know, he was an undrafted free agent, made his name with the Raptors. It was nice to see that he then got actual playing time with the Pacers. And, you know, Boston's one of the best teams in the East, and they're expected to be a championship caliber team. So it's not surprising that he wasn't playing, but I'd certainly love seeing it more.
That bench is thin too, which is a little surprising that he hasn't gotten a little bit more run, but good to see he's taking advantage of the time he does get.
You know, Matt, I'm going to close the show on this, which is, you know, in the last few years, we've seen a lot of legendary coaches retire. You know, obviously in the Syracuse world, we're talking about Jim Boeheim and then Roy Williams, Mike Krzyzewski in the college basketball world. In the football world, now we just saw yesterday, you know, Bill Belichick announcing that he's leaving the Patriots. He may not be retiring, but he's out after 24 seasons with the Patriots. And I think, you know, Nick Saban is another one of those legendary coaches. I think, you know, for my money, and again, you know, it's different eras, but I think he's the best college coach of all time, in my opinion, you know, having won 7 national championships. And there's only 2 coaches who have won national championships with 2 different schools, Urban Meyer and Nick Saban. And that's it. That's the list. Now, how does this relate to Syracuse? What people may not remember, and this is, you know, before you and I were even born, but in 1977, he was the Syracuse linebackers coach. You know, when he was just beginning his career, he had just started his career at Kent State as a graduate assistant in 1973. So this was one of his early stops on his way to the Mount Rushmore of college football coaches. But it's really cool to see that there is that Syracuse connection to, again, in my opinion, the greatest college football coach of all time.
That's nice to see how far the man came. I did see for a brief moment when he announces he's retiring and Belichick is not coming back to the Patriots. There's a brief moment where like, how cool would that be if they just swap places? Saban goes back to the NFL to coach with the Patriots, and you get Belichick to go to one of the most storied college football programs in history. Would be kind of cool, but the likelihood, it's not happening. But
it's a pipe dream, but it's a nice one to
think about for a brief moment. Well, one of the best broadcasters and podcasters in the land, Wes Chang, he's not retiring either. So we'll see him back here on the Juice on the Cues podcast. We'll check in after the North Carolina basketball game this weekend, see whether it was a happy game or maybe a less happy game for the Orange on Saturday. For Wes, I'm Matt. Thanks for tuning in here on the Bleav Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.